Josh Crawford is a vice president for technology and operations at Synchrony Financial, formerly GE Capital. He has designed, built, and led multiple learning and development departments from the ground up at several Fortune 200 companies. He teaches leaders how to discover their strengths, embrace a growth mindset, foster innovation, build trust, and create transformational change. Josh is also an unshakable advocate and expert in neurodiversity, and learning differences. In his work, Josh has formed strategic partnerships with the University of Connecticut, the University of Illinois, the University of Hawaii, and SCAD, Savannah College of Art and Design. Josh is a neurodivergent person himself with dyslexia, ADHD, dyscalculia, and anxiety. He has a master's degree in design management from SCAD, is the board chair of his local YMCA, and is a loving husband and father to three children. Welcome, Josh Crawford.
Thank you. Hello.
So happy to have you today on the Introvert Ally podcast. We've known each other for more years than I can actually remember. But that's a good thing because, as I was thinking about this interview today, I thought about the different roles that you've played in your organization and in your life. So I think the audience is, I know the audience is going to be benefiting from that. I guess I'll just start out by, I think my memory of how we first met, you were spearheading an ERG. Is that your remembrance of that? It was the Asia Pacific ERG at GE Capital?
Yes, that's correct. And that was, I think that was before your first book, The Introverted Leader, actually.
Actually, course correct on that one a little bit. That was when before A Quiet Influence. I had already published Introverted Leader, so that's how I was kind of getting speaking gigs and getting the word out. The first edition. Yeah, so that, because that came out in 2010, so if that helps track. But be that as it may, we connected and I immediately liked you. I like, you know, to work repeat gigs with clients that I respect and that challenge me. And you've always done that. And I remember interviewing you for Quiet Influence and you shared a real nugget that people keep going back to, which, do you remember what that was about?
Exercise.
That's right. Say a little bit about that and maybe talk about your journey. We'll first start out with your journey as an introverted person before you even became an advocate for this.
Yeah, I guess I didn't realize I was more of an introvert. I kind of believe if the ambivert is the correct term, kind of in the middle. So my wife was reading one of your books and she was laying in bed next to me and as I was watching TV and she kind of sat up and she said, "Oh my goodness, this is describing you perfectly." And I think it was a comment about a closet introvert. If that's correct,
probably.
Where, you know, it just, I have to incorporate or work, I have to turn it on a lot. It being just the networking part of it, the enthusiasm part of it, the connecting with as many people as I can and building your network. I also lead learning and development and facilitate a lot. So I'm up in front of the group, whether it's a class of 20 or an auditorium of 500. And, you know, I go into kind of my character role to help do that.
When you say your character role, what do you mean by that?
Sure. So, I'm trying to think, what's it called? Alter ego, where it's stepping fairly far outside of my comfort zone. And almost I see it as I'm performing on stage. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of going into a character. I don't have it named. You know, I read before that Beyonce had her alter ego was Sasha Fierce. And I had liked that because, you know, the dancing and the costumes and everything was uncomfortable for her at first. So she created an alter ego that she could perform the way that she needed to perform and still get through it. So I had kind of created an alter ego for myself to be up on stage in front of 500 people or facilitating a workshop for senior executives where I was very nervous on the inside, and I had to just kind of put on that character and that act to get through it until it became more second nature and much more comfortable, maybe more confidence. And it would be that same way where we had a networking event, or if we were at a global symposium where there's hundreds of people and, you know, you have the keynote speakers and then you have 30 minutes of networking, and those 30 minutes I know would terrify me and a lot of other people. And we'd kind of be the ones that are trying not to hang out in the corners, or looking like we're not hanging out in the corners, kind of the safe spaces where all the extroverts are out in the middle. So that was kind of one of the aha moments where I didn't realize I was doing these things, but my wife, knowing me and having kind of watched me, not at work, but hear me talk about these things, or honestly, every now and then, if we had a 30-minute break, I'd run upstairs to my hotel room for 10 minutes, just lay on the bed, turn the lights off, kind of breathe and regain my energy, and then go downstairs and network for the last 15 minutes of that networking period.
Well, you've learned a lot on this journey, and you share these things like the alter ego and the taking the time, which we were then able to put in the book and people really resonated with. Maybe let's just dial it back a bit. And you have such an interesting background, because when you talk about getting up in front of 500, even 1,000 people and doing your thing, you come to that from a long history, or even growing up in your environment, where you had some struggles. So maybe you could just give us a brief synopsis of what it was like, you know, what shaped you. And because I think for you, that's a bigger leap than it might be for many people to be able to navigate these corporate worlds that you've been in.
Yeah, I grew up far away from the corporate world.
You did. But, you know, the interesting thing is, Josh, you are still there. And you have changed with your organization as it's changed. You're not even, the name has changed of your company, right? And the structure. But let's go back a little bit to just let people know what that was like for you, because I think it really connects very much with the work you're doing today.
Sure, be happy to. So I grew up in Rockland, Maine. It's the lobster capital of the world. And there were only 100 kids in my graduating high school class, and it was a district high school. So there were like 3 neighboring towns altogether, just to tell you the size of it. And only 30% of the students that graduated went off to a 4-year college. So the expectations were, you know, you graduate and you're going to be a fisherman or a lobsterman or, construction worker, you know, trade skills. And I was one of the 30% that went off. But the journey there. So in the second grade, I'm going to touch on something a little bit more personal and different from introversion to help set the stage, if that's okay. So in the second grade, I couldn't read or write. And I was told by, State Department of Education, a representative gave me tests and then came down and, to the school, pulled my parents into one room, and I was in the room next to them. And they said, you know, Josh might not graduate high school, and don't count on college, was kind of the summary that they gave at the end. And I heard this through the door as I was sitting in the adjacent room. And then I heard my mom break down and cry. So I was like, ooh, yep, that confirmed what that was bad. I know I was 7, so I didn't know exactly what it meant. And that was the earliest, I guess, confirmation from authority figure of what my future was going to look like. You know, at that age, they say, what do you want to be when you grow up? And it's like, ooh, I guess I just want to graduate high school.
Yeah.
So I had to find my way where back then they didn't know what. So I have dyslexia, ADHD, and dyscalculia. Back then they didn't know what a lot of those things were or have accommodations for them. So my parents were fantastic. They helped, you know, edit my papers and proofread them. And I had tutors from the second grade to help out. And just the good thing coming from a hard working environment like that is I was willing to do the work. So I was always show up early, stay late, contribute when and where I can. And those were the type of things, as well as the extra credit or extracurricular activities. So I became, you know, captain of my football team, and I played tennis and track and field, and I was vice president of my student class, and I volunteered a ton. And those extra things were what helped me get into college, because I didn't have the best GPA, but it was the attitude and the work ethic. And I think that might be what helped carry me with being an introvert to put myself in situations where I was uncomfortable, but still, you know, the grit is there.
Yeah.
The willing to work through the discomfort is there.
What do you think made you get that A in effort, where you pushed yourself and really overachieved almost in some cases, or over, you know, got involved in so many areas?
Sure. I had a really good group of friends that was a support system, and my parents were a really good support system as well. So at first, early on, until the ninth grade, I hung out with kids that might not have gone to college or ended up going to college, because I was told that I was dumb, and I was told that don't bother trying. So I hung out with the kids that also weren't bothering to try.
And also weren't getting the support that you were, right? Or had the resources perhaps, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, their parents didn't care as much.
Right.
Right. And some of them were, you know, they knew that they weren't going to, well, maybe they weren't going to graduate high school, but they were positive that college wasn't for them.
And then you switched in ninth grade?
I did. So I ended up on April Fool's Day, super gluing my science teacher to his stool.
Oh, yeah. I remember
that. As April Fool's Day prank. And he saw that I had some positive strengths in me. And not a lot of authority figures told me that, right?
And what did he say to you? Maybe you could share that. You actually took a risk, because you could have gotten in real trouble, right? You blowing your teacher to a chair.
He should have expelled me.
I mean, you knew better at that age.
I did, but that was the thing. I didn't care. So at that point, it's like, if I get expelled, I get expelled. And honestly, to that group of friends, it was a really funny practical joke that I got a ton of good credit for. And I was proud that I pulled it off. He was a practical joker himself. I had asked him 2 weeks before April Fool's Day, what was the best practical joke a student ever pulled on him? And he said, Crawford, no one's ever gotten me in the 20 years that I've been a teacher. And then he's like dismissed it completely. So I thought it was a challenge. And so after I successfully super glued him to his stool, you know, it was a very proud moment for me, regardless of the consequences. But what he did is, so that was the last period.
But can I ask you, how did he get off the stool?
I don't know.
You don't remember? You blocked that part out?
Well, no. So he played it off beautifully. So it was the last period of the day. Once he realized he was stuck to his stool, he just stayed sitting down. And then we were like, hey, are you going to say goodbye to us? Are you going to come to the door and, you know, wave goodbye to all the students as they walk by, as he usually did? And he's like, no, I'm good. I'll stay here. And so whether he had to physically take his pants off, leave them to the stool, and then cut them out.
We'll never know.
Part out? Yeah, I'll never know. But he was mad the next day. And what he did was he actually had a night to think about it. So the next day, he told his first period class, and he said, here's all the names of the students in the seventh period class. They're all freshmen. One of them super glued me to my stool yesterday and ruined my favorite pair of corduroys. and whoever turns in the culprit first gets 150 points of extra credit. And he taught freshman science and senior science. So this was a bunch of seniors that were now on a manhunt for me. And everybody in the class saw me do it. Everybody in my class knew that I did it, except for, of course, him. And so throughout the day, that was what the entire school was focused on, was who super glued Mr. Holden to his stool. So seventh period comes around, and we all go into class, and I sit down and I think I'm just doomed. And he greets us and says, hey, guess what? You're the coolest group of freshmen that I've ever met, because all day long, the entire school has been on a manhunt for whoever the person was that super glued me on my stool, and none of you ratted them out. So congratulations to all of you. Now, if the person that you're protecting is not as cool as all of you and does not turn themselves in the next three sentences, all of you have detention. Ah, crap.
All right, no.
He's got me. So I put my hand up and I said, I'm sorry, I did it. And he pulled me out into the hallway. And this is where what you were talking about, he actually gave me an option. And he said, option number one is I take my creativity and my leadership and I promise him I put him to good use and I promise him that I'll go to college. And at that time, I had zero interest or zero intent on going to college. And I also questioned, what did he mean by creativity and leadership skills? And he told me, I'm the first student in 20 years to successfully pull off a practical joke on him on April Fool's Day, and I'm only a freshman, so I have to have some creativity. And for leadership, no one in my class turned me in with the entire school breathing down their necks and being offered 150 points of extra credit themselves as well. So you have leadership skills. And I had never viewed myself as having...
Wow. All it takes is one teacher like that, right? Or one person in our lives.
It's so amazing. Yes.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
one key pivotal moment, that one key pivotal person that helps change someone's perspective of themselves. And then the promise that I would go to college. So he said, look, if you take your creativity and your leadership, you put them to good use, you will figure out a way to go to college. And that's when I started to hang out with a different group of friends and I started to take sports more seriously and get involved in volunteering and student council. And honestly, it was those extra things that helped me get into college. The other cool thing is I went to college in Hawaii.
Yeah, you went as far away from Maine as possible, didn't you?
I did. Yeah. I wanted to go international, but my parents said no. So Hawaii actually turned out to be better.
Well, I love that story. And I know that you've probably told that to other groups. I would think you're a storyteller. And that's part of what we try to do on this podcast is have people share stories so that we can all learn and be inspired about, you know, how do we overcome obstacles? And so that's why I keep wanting to work with you, because you always do put the next challenge in front of you. And we figure out a way, right, to do that, to work through that. So I'd like to kind of shift now from your early childhood to then moving into some of the roles that you've had in the workplace and how your lens as a more introverted, also neurodivergent person, if you want to address that as well, you know, has shaped your work. Like, I know for a while you worked internationally, you made, you know, multiple trips to India. Perhaps in the learning and development field, you could speak to that a little bit about what, skipping ahead, of course, you know, a few years. But you ended up really carving, and you still are, a beautiful career at Synchrony. Talk to us a little bit about the learning and development area and how that, how do we reach everybody, Josh? What have you learned about bringing your lens to that space?
So as an introvert, I listen a lot, right? And I watch a lot and I try to read body language. I can't read books that well, but I try to read body language. And so in college, and I will get to corporate soon, but I think this was a key aha moment for me, which I think if people can identify those pivotal moments and aha moments in life, they have real power to shape the direction that you go in. And where I went to a mostly international school in Hawaii, a lot of the students, especially from Asia, weren't there. The culture was, you don't speak up in class. You don't ask questions because that can be perceived as challenging the professor. And a lot of times I would see groups of students kind of talking amongst themselves and trying to figure out if they got it or not. Or if I asked the professor, if I was confused and I asked the professor to paraphrase something back or repeat something back differently, or I paraphrased it back to them, other students would start to nod their heads that, oh, we didn't understand how the professor explained it at first themselves. And either my paraphrasing or ask them to paraphrase it back was what they were looking for as well. So I started to do this more and do it paying attention to a lot of the international students when they would talk in their small groups. And I would get smiles and head nods and thank yous from them. And that, you know, we'd talk after class. And it was really helpful. So I was like, oh, I'm actually helping other people learn where I've struggled with learning my entire life. It felt really rewarding and just so good to be able to help others do something that I've struggled with. So I started to partner more with professors where I would literally go to a professor the first week of class and say, are you more of a lecturer and reading out the textbook? Or are you more of a conversation and a dialogue and, you know, class discussions? And if they were the latter, then I would say, great, here's what I can help you do. I will sit in the middle of class and I will be the catalyst for discussions. And because it would be really hard to get some of the international students to speak up and have dialogue and discussions as well. And I said, you know, I'm not the best at test taking, but I will help in this area. And when it comes time for final grades, if I'm close, just round up, you know, just keep that. So I literally partnered with the professors early on, and professors said that they were the former that, nope, I am a lecturer and we read out the textbook and that's pretty much it. I'd be like, great, thank you. And I go to my guidance counselor and I'd switch professors. So it's all about figuring out how to, you know, what your strengths are and playing to them. And so I partnered a ton with the professors, and that really fulfilled me inside. And a lot of other students appreciated it. The professors appreciated it. So that's where I found a love for learning and development, when honestly, I hated school growing up.
But I think it's so interesting. I just want to interject there when you talked about it is a partnership, that point you made. It was, there's a term we use, managing up. We didn't make it, you know, Peter Drucker talked about that in your, with working with your boss. So the same with your professor. So it's like you were helping the professor to succeed, particularly in those discussion groups, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It was the areas that they wanted and they needed a partner.
It was a win-win. And so we have to get the courage to speak up, and look how it helped you. Well, you're a supportive helper and a quiet advocate in so many areas. When you see a need, then you go there. Is there any, can you give any, maybe one or two pointers to people who want to serve in that role and step up? They recognize a need. They see a need perhaps to start a group or to get more involved as a sponsor, for underserved individuals within the workplace. What would you suggest to be one or two things that you think have been successful for you in being a true ally? I see you as that's part of your role always.
Thank you. The thing with Synchrony, so we are a top Great Places to Work. You know, we've ranked Great Places to Work in the top 100 for many years in a row because we walk the walk. So when I said, hey, I want to do more around neurodiversity, I haven't had anything except for support. In fact, every year we have a global diversity symposium or global diversity experience where we bring our top 500 most engaged ERG members together along with our C-suite and our board of directors. It's the biggest thing that we do. And I was honored to co-host the entire event in 2021. And from there, they said, what do you need? How can we support you? So having the company and senior leadership back you, you know, HR, our DE&I group, that's phenomenal. That the first thing is, you know, you need to know that it's a safe space and you can go and do that. So I would say find a senior leader or senior HR person that is willing to kind of be your champion to help remove any roadblocks or help provide you the efforts that you need. Honestly, the UConn's mission is to partner with different companies or different people within organizations. You know, it's a nonprofit to help with the education, with the support. We are literally building the playbooks as we go. So the course that we built them, the work that we're doing with University of Illinois, UConn is helping with that as well. And we're writing the playbook as we go, and we're going to share it with everybody. Thank you for asking that question, because it is important for people to know, hey, where are resources? You know, if anybody wants to reach out to me on LinkedIn, please do so. You know, I've talked to dozens of people on, you know, going deeper, asking different questions on my journey and how I've done it. I chase the yeses.
You chase the yeses. That's going to be your pull quote.
If I talk to a dozen people and I get one or two yeses, then they're the ones that I keep in touch with. And then I'll circle back and I'll follow up with you. If once I get those yeses and then I can get some positive feedback from them, a testimonial or email or whatever, then I can go back to the other no's or the other maybes, because a lot of people don't want to be the early adapters.
And one thing I want to throw in something else that I've observed you do that you may not be highlighting also or recognizing that you do. We ran a book club a few years ago on creating introvert-friendly workplaces. And it was during COVID, I believe, and we, yep. And everything was virtual, of course. And you pulled in key people who were interested in kind of maybe, or maybe they weren't interested, but you knew that they had potential, just like your teacher, you know, back in high school. And you gave them significant roles in developing the outline, in facilitating. You shared the facilitation role or duties, kind of delegated pretty much everything. So I think that's an interesting strategy to consider as you're trying to help people develop the kind of confidence you now have, Josh, at many junctures. What do you think about that? Is that something you've recognized that you do?
100%. You know, a big part of leading for me is being a guide. And a saying I heard, I don't know who I can quote on this, but I really love it. And I think this is part of facilitating, which I've done a ton of, is I'd rather be a guide on the side than a sage on the stage. So it's not about me. All I'm doing is helping to line others up for success. The other part is, to what you touched on, is just getting to know the people that are interested in helping, what their strengths are, instead of randomly assigning, you know, hey, can you help facilitate? Can you help organize? Can you help with the communication? And asking them to say, look, we need someone to help kind of project manage this. We need someone to facilitate, and we need someone to help with the communication. Which of these are you interested in? And then assigning that to the person that has the most interest in it. And then if they're like, well, I like this, but I'm not sure if I'm doing it right. The other thing is building the network to say, okay, well, I have a subject matter expert that is in corporate communications that's happy to read or proofread this. So these are the successes that I have found in having to live a non-traditional or live in a neurotypical world where my neurodivergent self has to find the gaps and the patterns. It's just build a network of people that are supportive and care and have common interests, and always be willing to help them out because they're going to be willing to help you out as well.
That's beautiful. And the creativity, I will say, comes in there. You've learned creative ways to adapt from your childhood.
Yeah, there is no box.
There's no box.
And there is no box when you grow up neurodivergent, because you have to reinvent the world for yourself.
Constantly, right? Yeah. Constantly. Yes. And one, just the postscript to that experience that I referenced, is that people did really get to know each other too. That was a side benefit during COVID, when people felt so isolated across the world. They were working more than just on projects. They were working to get to know each other. So
100%. Yeah. People from across the business that wouldn't know each other otherwise. And these were the really important things that we were struggling with, because our culture is such a people culture and a networking culture. And this was honestly the first kickoff to our book club. And you graciously said, hey, I will come in and I will do a fireside chat to kick it off with anybody that's interested before we start it. And then so that you could tell us your background and tell us about your experiences. And you had some polls in there where people were like, I might be introverted, but I don't know. So everybody was able to say if they were an introvert, an ambivert, yeah, an extrovert. And then you popped in so many aha moments for people where the aha moments mean we're 80% there, that we've got all these ideas that are formulated, but we just don't have something to tie it together. So once you gave us that thread of knowledge and background and experience that helped tie together, oh my gosh, I am an introvert. I remember reading in the chat, you know, all the fantastic comments where people, you know, we're not trying to label anybody, but we're trying to help them identify the whys things happen. And it's to say, if I know that I do these things because I'm introverted, because I'm extroverted, because I'm ambiverted, there's just a freedom. Same thing with the neurodiversity. If I understand that I can't read well because I'm dyslexic, or I can't focus well because I have ADHD, then it's just, it takes that discomfort off of you, right? Because I think, and I'll stop for a second because I'm talking a lot here, but for, you know, I think the world that we live in, and correct me if I'm wrong, is built, especially in the corporate world, is built more for extroverts. And the introverts have to adapt to the extrovert world. Same thing is true. The world is built by neurotypical people, because that's, you know, 80% of the population. And the 20% of the neurodivergents have to find a way to fit into that world. So the intersectionality of being neurodivergent and being introverted, you know, there's a pretty big commonality there, especially if you're both. but I just love the commonalities that introverted people have of having to live in an extroverted world, as well as neurodivergent people have in having to live in a neurotypical world.
And not lose themselves in that, like not lose themselves. You said, well, there was one of your interviews that I heard, you said at the end of the day, we need each other. And so what you do is help people, but you also, as we wind down the interview right now, I think a good message too is that it's not, you also help your career, and you help you keep learning and keep developing, keep being stimulated. So do you have anything to say about that in terms of how helping has really contributed to your growth?
Yeah. I mean, we humans, we're social creatures, and we need we can't do everything independently and individually. You know, I have lots of weaknesses, so I have found people that are willing to help with my weaknesses. But the beautiful thing is, generally where I'm strong, they might be weak. And I am more than happy to help them out. And they know it going into it, right? So it's not like we have to have a contract agreement to say, hey, I'll help you out here if you help me out here. It's just, I go into things with no judgment, because I've been judged. And I will try to accept you for who you are and identify your strengths and your challenges. And fill in the gaps and surround yourself with a team of people. You know, there's so many statistics that a diversified team is the most successful, and it's diversified on experiences and the way of thinking and backgrounds. And, you know, that also includes introverts and extroverts. And, you know, one of the things that we would do in our classes when we were in person, instead of allowing the extroverts to shout out, we would give everybody 8x6 post-it notes and markers and say, write your thoughts down. So if you want 3 thoughts, great. If you want 5 thoughts, great. And then we'd put them all on the board or on a wall, and we'd categorize the thoughts. And that way, everybody has an equal voice, whether you're an introvert or extrovert. Now that we're virtual, we do that with chat. We do that with whiteboard. And yes, if you want to speak up and ask a question, great. You can take yourself off of mute and do that. If you want to pop something in chat, you can do that. So it's also trying to create an equal playing field for everybody is something else that allows everybody to kind of be comfortable and bring themselves and open up and have, you know that there's a no judgment environment that we're in.
Well, Josh, I'm sure we could talk another hour, but unfortunately this time, this is phase one. But your insights in terms of your empathy and how in your creativity, you know, really shows how you have developed as a leader and had the difference that you're making. And I know it's going to inspire others, as they listen to this. Do you have anything else you'd like to share before we close out our session?
I'd just like to thank you for being such a great partner. Over the years, we have known each other for a long time, and you know, we've worked together, you know, multiple jobs, roles that I've had, multiple books that you've published, different speaking events, And, you know, I truly value your openness and caringness and being able to talk through whatever's needed. I've learned a ton about myself through you, through your books, through your, you know, podcasts. So I'm grateful and I'm honored that you would have me on to talk with you and help see how and if I can help others.
Thank you so much. And I write back at you. Ditto, ditto, ditto. How can people get in touch with you? If you mentioned LinkedIn earlier.
Yeah. You know what? LinkedIn right now is probably the best way. I don't, you know, I've got a full-time job in learning and development. And then I have another full-time job volunteering with our, you know, our ERG. So, but I'm always happy to make new connections. And yeah, so I would say LinkedIn, Josh Crawford or Joshua Crawford.
Joshua Crawford. Okay. C-R-A-F.
Yeah.
And is it O-R-D? It's A-R-D, right? No.
O-R-D. Yeah. C-R-A-F-F-O-R-D.
Perfect. And we'll have that in the show notes too.
Sure.
As we're going to have a tough time pulling out the right quote for this session, because there were so many. Thank you so much. It was a true joy. And I'm honored to have you on our podcast, The Introvert Ally. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Honored to be here.
That wraps up another episode of the Introvert Ally podcast. Thanks so much for listening. If you found value from our podcast, we'd love you to subscribe, rate, and review us on your favorite platform. Also, please do share it with others. Thanks, and I'll see you next time.